ones?
Yes, yeah,
those are maggots.
Little skinny ones.
Yeah.
Why would it have maggots?
I don't, usually maggots like, you know, things that are alive, like meaty things.
It was a plant.
There might be plant.
I don't
maggots.
Think it was I maggots.
Know.
I thought maggots were like a little thick.
I'm not a maggot expert.
Ugh, it was disgusting.
But I intend to become one.
Ew, I just like cringed.
Okay.
All right, let's take a call. Call us at 201-209-9368. Tonight we're talking about puke. Yay.
And maggots.
Hi, you're on the radio.
Hi there. Hey, it's the Cyber Stalker.
Hi, Cyber Stalker.
Wait, which Cyber Stalker?
Are there two?
Oh, well, there's lots. No, I'm kidding.
Well, you haven't frankly called me the Cyber Stalker. I called maybe two or
yeah,
three
he's
times.
The one who's really good at stalking on the internet.
So am I.
Right. But I don't have an internet story. It's hard to link.
No, we want to hear your puke story. Come on.
Good thing about the internet, puke-free, mostly.
A number of years ago, you know, we had a small child. We live in Jersey. Go up to Hartford, and another couple with also small children is staying there for the weekend. And I guess they brought up a sick child. And as the weekend progresses, people are getting sick. But, we did okay. The three of us. And so we leave, like, Sunday morning. I'm driving a stick shift car, which my wife cannot drive. And, you know, just about 10, 20 minutes into the trip, I start to feel a little queasy. And so I have this theory that if you sing, you cannot puke. So I'm putting on all my favorite cassettes at the time, whatever, and I'm singing. And we go on, like, the Sawmill Parkway. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Not really a good place to pull over and puke and... So I'm singing, and I finally get to New Jersey and could no longer hold it back. So luckily, in the right lane, I managed to slow down, open the window, and I sang a word, and then the next thing I knew, it was just window.
At least you saved it for New Jersey.
How fitting.
Jersey pride.
Speaking of...
Your puke's too good for Connecticut.
Right.
He's giggling. All right, thanks for calling, mister.
Take care.
Have a good one. Andy, should we talk about our Shut Up Weirdo meetup? Or should we wait till we know exactly what we're doing?
Well, I think we can just say that we're thinking of doing a Shut Up Weirdo meetup.
Sometime in October.
You know what? If people have suggestions or ideas for a Shut Up Weirdo meetup.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Email us, shutupweirdo@wfmu.org.
Or you can go to our Facebook page and post ideas there.
Yeah, like we don't know if we're going to do it in Jersey or in the city.
Well, either we do it in Jersey City or Hoboken or Manhattan. I would vote for Manhattan.
I would too, because that way I don't have to go far.
Because it's like halfway between our Brooklyn people and our Jersey people.
Would people even... We were talking about how amazing it would be if me and Andy threw a Shut Up Weirdo meetup and not one person showed up.
Oh, I bet one person would show
up.
We
just sat there in our t-shirts.
We have to wear t-shirts?
Yeah, we have to wear t-shirts.
I thought it was like a
black
tie. No,
we're going to take t-shirts and give out prizes and stuff.
Well, we have.
I'm not sure what for yet, but yeah, that's my plan.
We haven't made many decisions except to have a meetup.
Okay, but no one's allowed to touch me. And I'm going to have a bodyguard.
Who's going to be your bodyguard?
I don't know. Station manager Ken said he would find someone.
Really?
Yeah.
Killer.
Those freakazoids out there. I'm going to go in a bubble.
Okay. So it's going to be fun. Good. It's going to be safe fun.
I'm going to be covered. I'm wearing a turtleneck.
Uh-huh.
And I'm covering every inch of my body.
And the sunglasses never come off.
Yeah.
Jackie O sunglasses.
I'm only going to show up for the last 3 minutes. All right, call
which
us.
Is as long as you can stand.
Yeah, 2-0.
That is to say, stand your feet.
Oh, that was good, Andy. I hate you. 201-209-9368. FMU, you're on the radio. Hello.
Really? I'm on the radio?
Yeah, isn't it amazing? How do you feel?
I feel excellent.
1,200 good. Watts of power.
What's your pukey story?
All right, so one Christmas, I was in high school. And I smoked weed with my friends. I thought I was a little tough guy. And I was in his basement. And his cousin also, they like shared the basement. And like I just wasn't feeling well at all. So his cousin left. He was like a lot older than us. He was really scary. And he knew I was going to throw up. So he said, don't throw up in here. So I'm holding it back. And I run to like a little slot sink in the basement. And then I broke his sink with my vomit. And then,
with your vomit?
You mean you
looking after
like,
clogged
it? Was at that velocity?
Or like taking a hammer to it?
Why? Wait, how did it break? Because you clogged it or because it was like super strong force?
No, I clogged it.
Okay. I was like imagining down. Like
bam.
Yeah.
And then do you guys ever see Wayne's World?
Yeah.
Of course.
You know how when Garth and Wayne pick up that guy and he's throwing up in the back of their car?
Yes.
No, but okay.
All right. Well, he gave me like a little Christmas bag because it was Christmas, and it was like, he's like, if you're gonna spew into this, and then at that moment, it was Wayne's World, all over to me. That's because that's exactly what he says.
Ugh. All right. Thanks for calling. Have a good one.
You too.
On the comments board, someone says, what's the worst place to puke? And I remembered a story my ex-boyfriend told me. He used to ride motorcycles, and one day he was riding on this bike in a really long road trip, and it was, like, super hot, and he was feeling crappy, and he puked in his helmet while he was riding.
I was going to say, an astronaut puking in a space suit.
Oh, because then it just floats around.
Well, it just, like, stays in there in your little face plate, you know.
Someone says, meetup is a good idea. So's the bodyguard. Someone else said, wait, no touching? Forget it. wait, already?
Well.
No, I'm having fun today.
We have maybe time for one more quickie call.
Oh, I just did a baby voice.
Yuck. Yeah, you did a baby voice.
Oh, my God. Okay, listen, wait. Who should win? Deed? I think that was her name. Deed? What was her name? I don't know.
Hydrogen peroxide.
Yes, she puked hydrogen peroxide foam at the Starbucks.
Foamy puke.
Or Tony from Brooklyn, who puked in a potato chip bag and then hid it in a dude's house that was banging Amy Fisher.
Well, you're forgetting Corn Snake.
Corn Snake won last week, so I'm going to send him a t-shirt anyway.
Okay. What did I write down?
D or Tony?
What about my story of vomiting on my wife?
No, you're not winning.
I can't win?
No.
You let my wife win once.
You're,
I don't know. What am I going to do?
Michelle
is here. She can be the tiebreaker.
Okay, there's a dude who puked in a potato chip bag and he was at a party and then he hid it in like the ceiling of some dude's house while the dude was banging Amy Fisher.
Because
Amy
he
Fisher.
Didn't get to hook up with Amy Fisher.
Or
Amy Fisher away from
there's
him.
A chick who drank hydrogen peroxide and puked up foam at the Starbucks.
What was the helmet thing?
Oh, that was just the story I was telling.
I'm going to say hydrogen peroxide. Deed.
What's your vote, Michelle?
Hydrogen peroxide.
All right, Deed, you're the winner. Email me your address and t-shirt size at shutupweirdo@wfmu.org. And don't forget about I'm Worth It with Michelle and Frangri next week at 7:30. Yes.
Okay, that's the end of the show. You have been listening to Shut Up Weirdo. You can comment during the show at WFMU.org. You can visit our website at shutupweirdo.com, which has links to Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, archives. Up next is Stuff You Should Know. Then at 8 o'clock, Mr. Fine Wine. You're listening to The Comet of Vomit, WFMU, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, live and archived at WFMU.org. Should we let Michelle say it?
No.
No. She has her own show.
Then I'm just going to say it. Let's end it here.
It's time for Josh and Chuck and Stuff You Should Know, the program that exposes the internal workings of life on this planet. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast, which is available from HowStuffWorks.com. Tonight, Josh and Chuck discuss cryonics, the practice of freezing human bodies for resuscitation at a later date, and then in part two, they take a look at fascism, real fascism. Now here's Josh and Chuck.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and that makes this Stuff You Should Know. That free podcast that comes out twice a week, faithfully. And you don't pay a dime for it, do you? Do you?
I don't. I certainly do not.
No one does, Chuck.
That's right.
But we're still glad that you listen to it, even though it is free.
Hi, frozen body.
Yeah.
That was your idea, wasn't it?
It seemed like a no-brainer for our Simpsons fans to call this cryonics episode "Hi, Frozen Body."
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Nick.
That episode has one of my favorite Simpsons lines of all time, where the old guy Jasper
I love Jasper.
Abe's sidekick.
He's so great.
He the frozen body.
Yeah, yeah. He was the one in there.
He comes out, he thaws out, and he goes over and picks up a moon pie, and he goes, "Moon pie, what a time to be alive." I love that line.
He's great.
Yes. So if you haven't seen that episode of The Simpsons, we strongly recommend you do, right?
Yeah, he just gets stuck in the freezer, right? And freezes?
Yeah.
By accident or something?
Yeah. And the Apu starts charging admission to see him.
Right.
Or guess what what's in the can that lost its label a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
So the concept that you can freeze a body and reanimate it is not just, you know, Simpsons lore.
No, it is not just cartoon TV lore.
No, actually, there's a guy who kind of came up with this. I guess in 1964, it's a guy named Robert Edinger. And he just died a week or so ago, Chuck.
That's right.
Like 10 days ago, the man died, which is really weird that he did because we had no idea who he was.
That didn't spur the idea for the podcast.
Yeah, you picked this one. And then it turns out the guy who created the field of cryonics, who coined the word cryonics, died a week before.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad because I picked this out last week, or maybe it was earlier this week. I can't
remember. He tapped you on the shoulder and was like, it's
maybe
time.
Maybe so. And then I always look at the news just to see, hey, if there's anything relevant. And I saw that he died.
Do you say hey when you check?
I do. And I saw that he died today, and my first instinct was, oh, awesome. How relevant.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then I thought, well, that's kind of sad.
Yeah.
Actually.
That was very nice of you to share his obit with me, though, as an intro.
Yeah, he was 92 years old, and he is now frozen, per his wishes, in Michigan.
Yeah, so he not only established the field of cryonics, which is basically the attempt to store human bodies at very low temperatures.
Yeah.
In order to eventually revive them.
Yeah, they're technically not frozen, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
To store human bodies at extremely low temperatures without freezing.
Yes.
That's called vitrification. We'll get into that. But he came up with this whole prospect, this whole idea, in a book called The Prospect of Immortality, which is why I just used the word prospect twice.
Right.
And he wrote it in 1964, and it had a pretty sweeping effect. In 3 years, 3 years later, the first person entered cryogenic suspension.
Yeah, that was pretty forward thinking, I would say, back then.
Sure.
Because this sounds like something from the future now. And imagine in the early 60s.
Right.
Probably thought he was nuts.
Right. But within 3 years of him writing this book, they already started carrying out his procedures that he kind of came up with and described. He's a physics professor. And he founded the Cryonics Institute, I believe is what it was called. And he joins two wives and his mother in suspended animation in a nondescript building outside of Detroit.
Yeah. And the first guy they froze, I'm going to say freeze this whole podcast.
Right.
James Bedford. He was a 73-year-old psychologist, and he is supposedly still frozen in
good shape
in Arizona. Yeah.
Yeah. And we should probably, let's do a disclaimer here. Like when we say frozen or freeze or frozed, when we really screw up, we're not talking about freezing. We're talking about, like we said, vitrification, which is a process of cooling the body down to extremely low temperatures without freezing. Freezing is the forming of, ice crystals, right?
And that's not good for the cells of your body.
No, but what they've found, supposedly, says groups like Alcor Life Extension Foundation.
Al Gore?
they say that if you vitrify a cell or a group of cells, aka tissue or a body or whatever, you can preserve it. Not indefinitely. There's actually a length of time. Do you know the time length that they say you can preserve a body cryogenically?
I'm going to guess 1,000 years.
10,000.
10,000?
Do you know why they say that?
No, actually.
Because just being on Earth for 10,000 years, the body's exposed to too much cosmic rays and it just destroys the cells on its own.
Hmm.
Death, literal death by cosmic ray.
Wow.
Yeah, but it takes 10,000 years. So they're hoping that, and this is the whole point of cryonics, is that the people that we freeze or vitrify now will be able to be reanimated and cured of any disease, whether it be age or heart attack or whatever,
sure.
whatever killed them in the future. So there's a lot of stuff floating around about cryonics, cryogenics. Walt Disney was not frozen.
He was not.
He actually died a year before the first guy was
frozen,
vitrified.
Okay.
So that's a complete and total rumor. But let's get to the let's talk about this, Chuck. There's a lot of people who are skeptics of this. You realize?
Oh yeah.
But there's a lot of rationality to it as well.
Sure.
Okay. So go.
Well, I think dead is where we should start off. Oddly enough, at the end is actually the beginning when we're talking about cryonics.
That's very clever.
Thank you. I just made that up. Alcor is one of the big companies in Arizona, and they have a quote, dying is a process, not an event.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't know if that's like their huge Terminator-style quote when you walk in the lobby, but it should be because...
No, they don't have it like on a sign or anything. Some guy comes up to you wearing like nothing but a lab coat and cowboy boots and shakes you while he says it and then runs off. That's how you're greeted.
That's good. He should get a job at Walmart. but that is their whole point in that is that when your heart stops beating, you are legally dead, but there is still some cellular and brain function for a short time.
Yeah.
And their goal is to nab you in that instant.
Mm.
And get the process started in that instant and preserve what minimal function you still have left in your brain
right.
in that instant.
And that's based on good science. Science is starting to realize that death is a gradual process. It's not, like they said, an event. It's not just like one moment you're living, next minute you're dead.
Yeah.
It's the whole thing. Remember, we talked a lot about organ donation, about brain death and cardiac death.
Sure.
And legally in the United States, if your heart stops beating... you can be declared dead, but as far as Alcor is concerned, your brain is still functioning.
Right.
So therefore, if you can be preserved, you can be eventually reanimated. Like I said, this is sound science. Hypothermia research
mm-hmm.
has led to a new understanding of heart attacks, right?
Right.
So a new technique of reviving a patient with a heart attack is to lower their body temperature to like 91 degrees very gradually. And then revive them by letting the body warm back up. And they've also found from this research that you can't just inundate it with oxygen because the oxygen goes in and just kills all the cells.
Oh, I imagine, yeah.
So, because there's this horrible caveat to resuscitating a heart attack victim is that when you resuscitate them successfully, you give them oxygen. It's just standard procedure at a hospital.
Sure.
And they're alive and happy and everything's good. And then 2 days later, they die. And so they started to look at why people died, and they found out that it was because their cells were perfused with too much oxygen too quickly.
Huh.
So they found that if you lower body temperature and then gradually reintroduce oxygen
right.
on its own, you can bring a person back effectively from death.
Well, it happens all the time, and I imagine, I mean, that makes sense. It's probably a traumatic event to be brought back to life on your body mm-hmm. itself physiologically.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, like, I just said it happens all the time. People's hearts stop. People are trapped under ice and quote-unquote dead, and they're brought back to life and function normally. Sometimes they don't function normally. But this isn't so much different than that.
No, it's not. And it's based on that. It's based on that concept.
It is.
So, Chuck, you're saying that if you... Let's say you are a member of Alcor Life Extension Foundation, right? Which apparently is not that expensive. They liken it to a lifetime of smoking cigarettes or having cable TV or the like.
Which is pretty expensive.
It is, but still, I mean, it's not as much as you would think, I think.
I got the fees.
Okay.
Right here in front of me. If you're a first family member, here's the deal. You got to sign up and you got to pay for life. And then you got to pay, I believe, for the process on top of that.
Right, because it's a membership club,
yeah.
And then, yeah, there's going to be a spike in pay when you die.
So a first family member is $620 a year. Each additional family member, if you want them on your cell phone plan, is $310 a year. A minor family member is $155 a year.
And minor family, like a distant
know,
aunt?
I guess. Not siblings or...
No, I think they mean a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, because it says... Oh, no, wait, you're right. It says under 18.
I'm totally right. Like an aunt you don't really care about.
That's what I thought.
A minor family.
Yeah, like outside the nuclear family. All right, and if you're a student, good news. It's only $310 a year, but I imagine your rate jumps up when you graduate.
Sure.
Because you're not
they always
anymore.
Screw you when you graduate.
So that's just the membership fees. The actual body freezing is...
Up to 150K, this article says.
Alcor is 200 now.
Is it really?
And the brain is 80. And there's surcharges if you're in England of 15 grand. Outside U.S., Canada, and England, it's 25 grand.
I wonder why.
And then you can also get, if you're not a member, you can pay for a family member. Like, let's say none of us are members and you want to freeze your father, the herbal Elvis, upon his expiration.
Yeah.
You would have to pay 50 grand, 250 grand.
Because there weren't any membership dues paid?
Yeah, so it's a $50,000 surcharge if you just want to say, hey, I want my dad frozen, and none
gotcha.
Of us were ever members.
Gotcha.
All right.
I'll have to talk to Dad about that.
See what he thinks.
Let's say you are a member in good standing. You've got, you know, minor family members totally insured under this plan or as members as well.
Yeah.
And we should also say, we keep saying Alcor. Alcor is the... one of the, it's far and away the most widely known cryonics group.
Yeah.
But there's like at least two others.
Yeah, the one in Michigan, just go to their websites if you want to compare them. The Alcor looks pretty, they're both legit. But
yeah, the one in Michigan's website is awful.
It looks sort of like a MySpace page.
It does.
Yeah. My advice to the Michigan Institute is to just pay somebody to do your website.
Seriously.
If you want to be taken seriously.
But that's the one that was founded by Robert Edinger.
Well, and I think he did the website in 1967.
Yeah, I think so too. He's like, someday there's going to be an internet, and this is going to be the first thing on it, and it's never going to change. Okay, let's say you're a member in good standing at any of the cryonics groups or foundations or labs, and you're about to die, right?
Yep.
What happens to you, Chuck? Take us through the process.
Well, the first thing that happens is they are literally at your deathbed. The team is waiting for you to expire.
I want Arby's.
And as soon as they do that, as soon as you die, rather, they will, as the article says, spring into action.
And also, Chuck, we should say they have to wait until you're declared dead. It's illegal to to put someone into a cryonic suspension.
Or as the Michigan website says, right now, it's illegal.
Okay.
So I think they envision a future where if you're on life support or something, you could probably, or if you're just fully healthy.
They also envision a future where we reanimate dead people.
Yeah, that's true. So what they do is they spring into action. They stabilize your body by getting blood flowing and oxygen, but I guess not too much oxygen. And they pack you in ice and pump in some heparin, which is an anticoagulant, so your blood doesn't clot. And then they rush you.
It's like the opposite of a calf stomach.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then they rush you to the facility where the real science begins.
Right, and it's about here that things get a tad... cutting edge.
I would say so.
So basically what they have to do is remove the water from your body, right? And not just like your pee or your saliva.
Yeah.
They got to literally get the water out of your cells.
Yeah, I read at least 60% of your cells.
Okay.
So it must be all the organ cells and all the vital.
And they go after the brain in particular.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The brain is of the utmost importance. And you can actually have your brain alone cryonically suspended for something like 50K.
80.
80K.
They've raised it in the past 5 years.
When was this article written?
I don't think it was that long ago, but hey, it ain't cheap. And they still store it in your head, by the way. It's not like Futurama.
Oh, cool.
They said it does too much damage, and why bother? Your head is a great bowling ball case,
that
essentially.
Is awesome.
So
they just cut your head off and preserve the whole thing, but it's... Yeah. Really just your brain that's undergone the vitrification process?
Yeah.
That is neat.
Ted Williams, his head is floating somewhere.
His whole body wasn't?
They removed the body. They're in two separate chambers.
Oh, that's right. That's
so go ahead.
A heck of a stitch-up. when you're on the table, they remove the water from your body. And how do they do that? I didn't understand how they remove water from your cells.
So you're asking me?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is it a pressing?
I don't know, man.
The doctor just pressed down on you?
I tried to find out the literal process of how they get the water from the cells and replace it with the antifreeze.
But they do replace it with antifreeze, a glycol-based, basically a human antifreeze.
Yeah, a cyroprotectant is what they call it.
A chiro.
Cryo.
Cryo. We got there eventually.
Jerry's
it's a cryoprotectant.
Like, what are you guys doing?
Jerry's like, this is not their best day.
Yeah, it's a cryoprotectant.
So they pump you full of this stuff, basically like embalming fluid that will never freeze. And then they lay you on a bed of dry ice.
Yeah.
And here, this is astounding to me that you can even get any tissue down to this degree. But basically, they freeze your body. They vitrify your body down to negative 130 degrees Celsius, which is negative 202 degrees Fahrenheit. Negative 200 degrees Fahrenheit. Isn't that
That's
like
crazy.
Absolute zero?
I don't know. We've been called out on that before, right?
Yeah, we'll figure it out. No, we've been called out on whether 40 degrees is negative 40 is the same in Celsius or Fahrenheit, which it is.
Oh, right.
And then once your body reaches that temperature, you are vitrified. You're ready to go. You're ready to be stored for up to 10,000 years. And what they do is they put you in a tank, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, that means that your molecules have slowed down to the point where the chemistry stops.
Right, there's no metabolism going on whatsoever.
Nothing. It's called the glass transition temperature.
Uh-huh.
And so it just, everything kind of goes.
That's suspended animation. It's a perfect example of it.
Thank you.
It's great, Chuck. So they stuff you in a tank, right?
That's right.
Called if it's just your head, it's called a neuropod, right?
Okay.
And then if it's your body, it's called a, I think a cryopod?
I'd call it a full body pod.
Okay. and then they put you in a container that can hold maybe four or five bodies, because you're not by yourself.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, I thought so too. Especially if somehow you're still cognizant, like if that was possible, and you just didn't really like the people around you.
You're stuck with them for 10,000 years.
That would stink.
Yeah.
So there's a pretty nice picture of an Alcor container that holds four whole body pods and six neuropods.
Huh.
Right? So it's like a freaky futuristic nursing home in there.
Yeah.
You know? and there you go. You're on ice, as it were, for 10,000 years. And then every once in a while, they have what are called perfusion thresholds, I believe.
Oh, yeah?
And they have software that measures that, like the concentration of liquid nitrogen, because that's what you're in. You're in a vat of liquid nitrogen that's being cooled down ultimately, even less than 202 degrees Fahrenheit. It's down when you're in cold storage, as it were.
Uh-huh.
You are stored in about negative 320 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, man.
And liquid nitrogen at that temperature will eventually evaporate, so they have to keep adding some. And they have software that monitors this, and there you go. You are officially in cryogenic suspension.
Head down, upside down.
Yeah, which I thought was pretty clever.
Fact of the podcast for me. If there's a leak, you want your head down because
yeah.
You want your brain. I guess if it leaks, the bottom obviously will be the last bit to contain any of the liquid, so that's where they want your head.
It's very clever.
Yeah.
But again, if you're the least bit conscious or cognizant or anything like
you're,
that.
You're dead.
Yeah, but man, can you imagine? Like that gives me a headache just thinking about being upside down.
I'm sure.
It's awful.
Yeah.
All the frozen blood rushes to your head.
That's right.
In one giant block.
Icy blood.
Yeah. Vitrified.
That's right.
So what's the deal with all this, Chuck? I mean, as we said, there's a lot of people who criticize this stuff. And it seems like for good measure. They're saying, like, no, you're just, like, this is a nice fancy process that you guys have come up with, and we're sure that, you know, you're doing everything you're saying. And, yes, it is based on real science, but you can base anything on real science, and it's still just pseudoscience.
Sure.
If it's not science, it's pseudoscience. It's trickery, right?
Well, they get a lot of heat, obviously, places like Alcor do, and they, one of the problems they say is that first of all, it's based on three very different scientific fields. So the reason why most scientists don't come out and say this can work is because they're scientists in a single given field.
Right.
And they don't understand that this involves three very different disciplines.
They're like podiatrists.
So, yeah, exactly. One of the other problems is that one of the reasons that, what are they called, cryobiologists? Or
yes, cryobiologists, people who study low temperature biology.
Yeah, they say that they don't come out and say it can work because they feel like it has been given the pseudoscience moniker, and so it'll overshadow the real work they've done, quote-unquote real work, that they've done with other kinds of cryo-freezing. So they're just like, I don't even want to talk about that stuff.
Right. I mean, your professional reputation is at stake.
Yeah, sure.
But, again, that doesn't necessarily mean that just because skeptics have labeled this fraud that it doesn't necessarily work. The other big point as far as cryonic groups or boards or whatever,
mm-hmm.
The point that they tend to make usually is that we have no idea how to reanimate anybody.
Yeah, they're upfront about that.
Yeah, they're saying, like, what we're doing, and this is what Alcor Life Extension is known for, is basically they know how to vitrify tissue.
Yeah.
And then just keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Indefinitely. And so that's what they're saying they're doing. And basically, they're just the keepers of these bodies that are in suspended animation or dead, depending on your view,
right.
Until we come up with a way to revive them and repair anything that might have been wrong with them. And the great white hope, apparently, is among cryogenic adherents is nanotechnology.
Yeah, which makes sense.
Right.
Nanotechnology, they can get down to the single atom and do mechanics work, essentially.
Right, repair work on cells.
So they think that that is the future of being able to reanimate people like this.
Yeah, which, again, that's all well and good, but you can't just be like, oh, yeah, we heard about nanotechnology, and that's probably where it'll be. And how about this? Not only will it be the field of nanotechnology that reanimates people, but it'll be in 2040, which is apparently the number that they throw out. So,
a little dubious there.
But it seems like if they stick to the fact that, no, we're putting people in suspended animation, and there's a good chance that if death is a process and we're getting to this process,
mm-hmm.
we're interrupting this process, then we can reverse it.
Yeah, they're eventually. Not saying we're promising eternal life or we're promising that we can bring you back from the dead. They're basically pretty upfront about saying we are a high-tech storage facility.
Right.
Period.
So when we talk about reanimating people, this is not new. The idea of reanimating a corpse is extremely old. There was this cool little movement in the 19th century called galvanic reanimation.
What's that?
Basically, it amounted to hooking recently killed executed criminals up to like huge batteries via cables.
Wow.
And during public display, like applying the electricity and making them like twitch and making their eyes open or making them grimace horribly. And that was like how you reanimated a corpse, which
is that like at the World's Fair or something?
By definition, that is reanimating it, but you're not, that's the technical definition, you know? It didn't imbue any life into it.
Sure.
But it did give Mary Shelley a good idea for Frankenstein.
Is that where she got it?
Yeah, that was a whole idea for a very long time that, like, if you could, under the right circumstances, introduce an electrical current to life, you know, to a dead body, you could bring it back to life, which is pretty clever if you think about it, because this was before the time of neuroscience, or about the time it was nascent, right?
Yeah.
And neuroscience, if anything, has given us the awareness that everything is the result of like electrochemical conduction throughout the body.
Right.
So it was pretty smart to think of electricity as a way to reanimate bodies, although it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, well, and that's also the reason why they obviously the brain is so important, and they say you can just opt for the $80,000 head freeze because maybe in the future, I mean, if we're far enough along where we can reanimate a person from cryogenic freezing,
mm-hmm.
then we should be at the point where we can clone you a body to go along with that head.
Why not?
You know?
A hot body, too.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Sure. I would wear Daisy Dukes all the time in my body.
You don't even wear shorts now.
Well, I don't have a hot cloned body.
I've seen you in shorts once, actually.
When?
When you came over to my house to borrow the lawnmower, you had on shorts.
Really?
And I saw your bare leg. I've seen you in boxer shorts, too.
When?
I think on one of our trips, like you changed clothes in front of me or something.
I think you should get a little more specific for the audience.
Well, I mean, we didn't have like a dress-up party, but
okay.
It was like, hey, I got to, you know, we're late for something and you were changing your clothes or something. I don't know. I mean, I didn't mark it on my
calendar. Oh, in Guatemala? I'll bet it was in Guatemala at Lake Atitlan.
Okay, sure.
That one crazy day. So, anyway.
That was, happened there?
That was possibly the wildest tangent we've ever been on. You've seen me in my boxers and in shorts.
I've seen your bare legs, and they're fine. I don't see why you don't like shorts.
I'm just, no.
No, not for you?
No. But it could be for a cloned body.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's just get back to it, buddy. Again, back to the reanimation research. There, I think we've talked about before Max Planck Institute back in 2000. There's this one thing on the web, and I can't find any follow-up stuff or any lead-up stuff, but basically they're talking about what therapeutic hypothermia research has shown, that it's not death that injures cells and tissue and makes them unreanimatable.
Right.
It's trying to reanimate them and doing it too quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And they were working on reanimating dead bodies. And apparently since then, we have figured out how to reanimate some cryopreserved tissue, like a rabbit kidney.
Yeah, it worked.
In 2005, apparently, they vitrified a rabbit kidney. They took it out of a rabbit. They said, you wait here, vitrified the kidney, brought it back, put it back in the rabbit, and said, go urinate. And the rabbit did.
And the kidney exploded.
The end.
They have also reanimated a nematode worm. Big deal, but hey, it worked. But no other mammals.
Yeah.
They said dogs and monkeys, they've had their blood replaced.
Well, remember that supposed Russian research film from 1941 of the dog's head?
Oh, God, that's awful.
Yeah.
But dogs and monkeys, they've had their blood replaced with the antifreeze, essentially,
mm-hmm.
cooled it to below 0 degrees, and rewarmed it and revived them successfully. But that's 0 degrees is a long, long way from -300 Celsius.
Yeah. Yes. But
they're pointing this to this and saying, hey, look, this could be possible.
Right. And it wasn't even vitrified, was it? It was just brought to a low temperature?
No. It said their blood was replaced.
It was. Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I don't know if all the cells were, but the blood was at least.
Yeah. So there are things to look for in the future when you are successfully reanimated, possibly given a cloned body that wears Daisy Dukes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be some legal issues that people are already starting to think of.
About reanimating?
Yes. For example, when you are taken off to the cryonics facility, as far as society and the court system and the Social Security Administration is concerned,
oh, sure.
You're illegally dead.
Yeah, I didn't think about that.
What happens when you come back to life?
You'd have to apply to be a new person again, I guess.
So they figure that probably somebody who's presumed dead and wasn't, right, but they were declared legally dead and they come back after that, nobody says, well, sorry.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to say that somebody who's reanimated. But one of the other propositions that they're considering as a possibility is issuing you a new birth certificate.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That is
cool. So you would be literally reborn as far as the law is concerned.
Huh.
And then also, what happens, Chuck, as happened in the 1970s when there were, I think, six big cryogenic suspension companies in operation.
Yeah.
And that number dropped dramatically in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, what happened to those bodies? Do you know?
I do know. They were left to rot.
Really?
Yes. The company went bankrupt and said, we don't have any money to keep these things going.
Wow.
And since it was a corporation, they could say that, and the person walked away, but the bodies were just left to thaw and rot, and that's what happened. Alcor supposedly has a fund set aside to where if anything happens to the company, it will provide a bridge to continue care until they figure out what to do with these.
That's where a lot of the $200,000 goes, supposedly. I think about half of that goes into that trust.
And I was researching them. Apparently, they have a self-perpetuating board, which they're frequently criticized for.
Right.
because it's just there's no new blood in there, as it were. But the board is generally, or has been, very transparent about how much money is paid. Like in 1990, supposedly, they announced that they were going to slash their staff's pay across the board by like 25%.
Right.
The average staff worker there made like 25 grand.
Yeah, board members don't get paid at all, right?
Right. So supposedly these people are just into it like to further cryonic research and and keep these bodies suspended, right?
That's what you'll see on their website, at least.
Right.
Yeah.
But I was reading some outside links. There's this blog called Depressed Metabolism, which is just about all that. And they were going over a 2009 Alcor report. But they seem very conservative, but not good at generating their own income. They rely a lot on donations.
Yeah.
All of the technology they use is licensed elsewhere. So there's like bleeding money, but they manage to stay afloat because of donations from like wealthy members, which is kind of unfair.
Right.
So, but they're very conservative too.
Right.
Whereas like the Cryonics Institute was always kind of criticized for being like a little reckless, a little cutting edge, but
right.
they were looking at cryonics as not necessarily a way to keep people in suspended animation, but how do we apply this medically and get these people reanimated again?
Right.
Not just indefinitely, you know, in suspended animation.
Well, and how do you get medical, mainstream medical science behind this period is one of their big battles.
Yeah.
I know that Alcor is in Arizona, and then 2004 there was a bill passed by the House there in Arizona that basically was going to put them under the regulation of the state funeral board, which would have effectively probably shut them down.
Yeah.
And it was pulled from the floor, but they said it was a really nasty debate on the floor. And because there's a lot of religious ethical ramifications here that I guess we could talk about. But they said that we don't know. This could come back and they could shut us down. You never know.
Yeah.
In Arizona, at least.
Yes.
But the ethical concerns is Alcor, on their website again, has addressed some of these, because a lot of religious folks might say this is not, you know, something you should be doing. You shouldn't be playing God, quote unquote. And they say that patients are theologically equivalent to unconscious patients in a hospital with an uncertain prognosis.
Yeah.
Theologically speaking.
And
then they've had people write in to, like, people in the Catholic Church and Protestant churches and even the Jesus Christ, Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, they've written essays supporting it. Some people have.
Yeah, it's like if you're on life support, you're playing God, or somebody's playing God with you.
But other people in religious circles have blasted it, so it's depends on who you want to listen to.
Yes, it does.
And they said it's not just for the rich. That's one of the myths, they say. It's not an indulgence of the rich. And they say most of the membership is middle class.
Yeah, and paid for with insurance?
Yeah. Life insurance? I don't. Is that true?
I didn't get a chance to research that one.
I'm going to have to look into that. Not for myself, but Paul Rudd's making a movie about this. Did you see that?
It's been done.
No. What?
Iceman.
No.
Iceman 2, The Return of Iceman. Iceman 3.
The Iceman
Lil Killer. Iceman Jr. what else?
Well, this one is bona fide. Errol Morris, the awesome documentarian.
Yeah.
He's making his first non-documentary film since the early 90s.
Fiction?
Sure. But it's not fiction because it's a true story.
Oh.
So first feature film.
Yeah. Wow, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's called...
He just came out with a new documentary recently, too, didn't he?
Yeah, it's about that... It's about the tabloid scandal when that woman kidnapped the Mormon?
I don't know.
I think it's a woman kidnapped some Mormon guy and like took him away to some cabin and forced sex upon him for
that
like months.
Crazy.
And then came back and was a celebrity because of it in the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks really good.
So his feature film, sorry for interrupting.
That's all right. It's based on the memoir by Robert F. Nelson called taken from a This American Life segment. And Glass is producing this.
Isn't everything taken from a This American Life segment?
And the name of This American Life was You're Cold as Ice, was the name of their show. Personally, I think High Frozen Body, a little better.
Way better, Chuck. Way to go.
So Paul Rudd, one of my favorites. He's playing this dude.
Yeah. Good for him. Good for Ira, too.
Oh, we need to talk about Ted Williams real quick.
Oh, yeah. Good Lord. That was close.
Well, as you said, Walt Disney was not suspended in liquid nitrogen, but Ted Williams, the famous hitter, the last hitter to hit 400 in baseball, mm-hmm. is.
Yeah, he's an Alcor member.
Yeah.
2002, they put him on Vitrify. And
they set it to vitrify.
Yeah, and he was like, "Woo!" there was a legal battle over it. Apparently, his daughter was accusing his son of having him vitrified, put in cryonic animation or suspended animation, because he wanted to later sell his dad's DNA. Which apparently his son was like, "Yeah, maybe," but dad still wanted to. We had a signed pact. Me. And our other sister, but not you.
Yeah.
And so...
he didn't even know him till he was 30, though. He was a half-brother.
Is that right?
Or a half-son.
Okay. Well, Ted was running around telling people all sorts of different stuff, apparently.
Yeah.
He told his daughter that he wanted to be he wanted to be cremated and have his cremated remains scattered over the Florida Keys.
So says she.
The daughter.
Yeah.
The son said, no, we had a pact, a signed pact, which mm-hmm. apparently he was able to produce. So yeah. A judge said, okay... Ted's going to stay frozen. You can't sell his DNA. Bing, bang, boom, Bon Jovi. Case closed.
Yeah,
that and the banging a gavel.
The son got a... He was painted in an unfair light because of this Sports Illustrated article by Tom Verducci that basically slammed him as, hey, this kid didn't even know until he's 30 he's going to sell his DNA. And it was apparently he got one version of the story and that's it. And... stopped his fact checking there. So
oh, yeah.
I've seen follow up reports where this guy was like, that ain't what happened. And I did not want to sell his DNA. And like, we really got to be close after I met him later in life and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Well, you got anything else?
Just if you want to know how popular this is, as of June of this year, Alcor has 950 members and 106 quote-unquote patients.
Yeah, that's what they call them, huh?
And Michigan, at the Cryonics Institute, I believe, has over 100. So there's a couple of hundred and change people currently in the United States. That
upside
are
down upside in vats down of liquid nitrogen.
With other people.
Yeah.
One of them might be Ted Williams. I wonder if they're like, hey, check it out.
Yeah.
The Yankee Clipper. No, that was Joe DiMaggio.
Ted Williams was the boss.
Oh, was he?
No.
He was the Red Sox.
It was like the monster or... I always confuse him with Johnny Bench. Didn't they play at the same time? Or Carl Yastrzemski?
Maybe it may have overlapped.
It was like the big hitter or the monster hitter. Or...
Well, he was the last player to hit 400, so.
Yeah, I can't remember. Well, anyway, way to go, Ted. If you want to learn more about baseball, we encourage you to type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com. You can also type in cryonics, C-R-Y-O-N-I-C-S. And that will lead you to some cool articles. Also, if you have not gotten around to reading H.P. Lovecraft's brilliant short story, Herbert West Reanimator.
Oh, yeah?
Check it out. Probably his best. And I said Reanimator, which means that it's time for a listener mail.
That's right. Boy, I'm going to get hammered by Yankee fans and Red Sox fans for that.
Yeah, I back off of that one.
Joe DiMaggio's a Yankee Clipper.
Ted Williams is the monster.
Well, the green monster is that what you're thinking?
Yeah. I mean, clearly that's influencing it, but there's something there.
All right. Today, Josh, I got on Facebook. I don't know if you saw, and I was like, I can't find any good listener mail, so tell me some stories. And I just got a few of those to read off. Nathaniel Jerkiewicz got hit by a car while walking home from work earlier this week as I was listening to one of your episodes.
Cool, which one?
I don't know. He said he rolled off the hood and checked to make sure nothing was broken. Jeez. And then scrolled back to what I had missed.
Nice.
And, yeah.
That was Nathan?
Nathaniel, so I hope you're okay.
Yeah, Nathaniel. Hang in there, Nathaniel.
Belina Alina.
Yeah.
Said, my doctor says I mispronounce letters when I speak, not because of a lisp, but because I have a heart-shaped uvula. To be honest, until he pointed it out, I didn't have any idea that everyone else's uvula did not have a split in the center. How about that?
Yeah.
Split uvula.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And Angie Stecken says, when I was 7 years old, my mom spotted a wood tick in my ear while eating at the Subway. I screamed hysterically. My stepdad tried to remove it with a variety of plastic cutlery.
And an acetylene torch.
I attracted the attention of a cop who tried his best with keys... I started to bleed from my ear, and the subway told us to leave. The subway did.
Weird.
My mom sat me on a bench outside, continued the quest. The man sitting next to us asked about why I was screaming, and once my mom told him, he asked if he could try and produce a hook for a hand.
What is going on with this story? I'm so confused.
She had a tick in her ear. No one could get it out. They went outside, and this dude...
'Cause the subway told him to.
And then this dude with a hook on his hand said, can I give it a shot?
Okay.
It's got to be New York. I screamed even louder as my mother held me down, and the man plucked the tick from my ear. So I thank him for saving my life, and I still smile every time I encounter a person with a hook for a hand.
And they think that she's laughing at them.
I don't know. And then finally, congratulations to our buddy Andy John Cox.
Yeah, with the mustache.
He got engaged.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Yep, and she said yes, and he's getting married, and Andy's one of our boys, and way to go, dude.
That is fantastic. Way to go.
I'm sure you shaved off the mustache, and it said, will you marry me underneath it in pen.
In tattoo. Yeah, that was a great idea, Chuck. Stories. If you got a story, you want to hear it. Wait until Chuck asks. Nah, forget it. Just go ahead and let us know. Go onto our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. You can also tweet us stories if they consist of 140 characters or less.
Ooh, that'd be good.
That's a great idea. We want your 140 character story.
That's pretty
on
cool.
Twitter. Good idea, Chuck. SYSK Podcast is our Twitter handle.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called Cryonics. Hi, Frozen Body. Originally podcast at HowStuffWorks.com on August 30th, 2011. This is the radio version of the Stuff You Should Know podcast. Now for part two, Josh and Chuck examine fascism. This episode was originally podcast on March 11th, 2010.
The National Weather Service has issued a flood warning for the following counties and areas. Passaic, New Jersey, Orange, New York, Putnam, New York, Rockland, New York, and Sussex, New Jersey.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark.
Fascist.
Josh Clark, fascist. That's exactly what I was going to say, too. I was going to say, Chuck, you're always calling me a fascist pig.
Not true.
Isn't this? Anyway, that's Charles W. Chuck Bryant.
Hello.
We're doing a podcast on fascism today.
Yes.
And as I was saying, Chuck's always calling me a fascist pig, but I don't know that that's necessarily accurate after I read this article, how fascism works.
Well, you should stop giving speeches from your balcony above Atlanta.
Shaking my hand, parting my hair to the side a little bit.
You take down all the posters of you all over the place.
Never.
So,
Chuck.
Yes.
You want to talk about fascism?
Let's do it.
Okay. So, did you know, I was surprised to find this out, Benito Mussolini was the guy who actually created fascism. He definitely coined the term.
Yes, he did.
And this concept of fascism was drawn upon from ancient Roman techniques.
Yeah.
Military techniques.
Plato.
Plato, yeah.
Nietzsche.
Sure.
Machiavelli.
Of course. And I was surprised to find this out because, you know, he ended up strung up by his ankles with his throat slit, people kicking him in the head. He'd fall down after he was dead, and they'd string him back up.
Yeah, it didn't work out too well.
No, it didn't. And really, he was kind of Hitler's lackey, really.
Sure.
So I was surprised to find that he was the guy who started fascism, but by God, he did.
Yeah, apparently he was a socialist until he got a hold of Nietzsche, and then he was like, whoa.
Yeah, Nietzsche has screwed a lot of stuff up in this world.
Sure.
I like him personally, but you got to take the guy with a grain of salt, you know?
Yeah.
So as far back as, 1922... Mussolini was starting to ruminate on fascism, right?
Yeah.
And what is it, Chuck? What people throw this word around like it's awesome or sweet or LOL. Have you noticed people use LOL to a ridiculous degree these days?
No. But I do know that fascism is, I think, I can't remember who it was, but someone said it's the most misused word of our times.
Yeah.
And I believe it.
Or incredible.
Right.
Yeah.
But you hear, you know, Bush is a fascist. Obama's a fascist. Nancy Pelosi's a fascist. Dick Cheney's a fascist.
Yeah.
None of them are fascists.
All right.
We're not going to debate that here.
I thought that was a nice sprinkling of liberals and conservatives in there, though.
I should throw in a Tea Party member to cover all my bases. Josh, it comes from the word fascio, Italian, meaning bundle.
You're not going to say it with an accent?
And fascio.
Nice.
Than previously, the Latin root fascis or fascis.
I took it as fesis.
Fesis. And that is a bundle of sticks tied to a single axe. And that kind of says it all.
It is. It's pretty much again, Mussolini has a master stroke.
Yeah.
This is a perfect descriptor, sure, of what fascism is.
The state is the axe.
Yeah.
And
which
the people
can
are
chop
the sticks.
And crush.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the people are the bundle of sticks that support the head.
Right. Or break.
Depending. Fascism has a tendency to push people to the breaking point, doesn't it?
I would say so.
Although fascism also kind of brings out the absolute worst and conformist in human beings as well.
Yeah.
So fascism is basically the opposite of democracy. The whole point is the state. There
right.
is no individualism.
Nope.
There is no...
capitalism, really.
No, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's communist.
Right.
And actually, communism and fascism are opposite sides of the coin.
Sure.
At least economically.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Because with communism, it's...
one social class.
Right. And with fascism, there are very distinct social classes that you cannot get out of.
Yeah. If you're in a social class is under fascism, then be prepared to stay there.
Right. And another defining characteristic of fascism is that the whole point of the state is war.
Yeah.
It's based on natural selection,
mm-hmm.
Darwinian evolution,
sure.
Where the state's entire existence is to wage and win war, and it's survival of the fittest. So everybody's out there waging war,
right?
And if you lose, well, then you are naturally selected. You're absorbed by another state. You're
sure.
conquered. You're subjugated. And the state that did the subjugating was selected as the fittest. It was the strongest. So the entire point of the state is to wage war.
Imperialism, baby.
It's pretty rotten stuff, really.
Yeah.
And Mussolini put it that war alone brings up to its highest tension all human energy and puts the stamp of nobility upon the peoples who have the courage to meet it.
Right. What a jerk. But, you know, it was a rallying point. People got into it for a while.
Yeah, and how? I mean, like, you wonder, how can some guy come along and say, you have no individualism, everything your mommy told you about how great and unique you are and your little snowflake is wrong,
right.
And your entire purpose in life is to support the glory of the state, which is going to go wage war indiscriminately.
Right.
How do people get duped into this? How do they follow along?
I'll tell you how, buddy.
Okay.
One thing that the fascist preyed on, and we say preyed because it's not strictly defined. Fascism isn't really around anymore, although there are tendencies in smaller groups. But as far as big-time governments,
mm-hmm.
it's gone. But one thing they do is they take a nation in crisis.
Yeah.
For instance, let's say Europe after World War I.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, we can return our country to its former glory. All you have to do is buy into it. So people got to buy into it at first. It can't be done with the iron fist initially.
Right. And the way they buy into it is that the people are already suffering, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of people blame the Treaty of Versailles that ended World War I for eventually leading to World War II. There was a lot of restriction placed on the losing nations.
Right.
Their normal working class people in countries like Germany
mm-hmm.
suffered tremendously.
Yeah.
And they had to repay to rebuild nations that they went to war with. And there was no trust whatsoever.
Right.
So it was kind of a bad treaty, actually. But it did set the stage for fascism, right?
Right.
So you've got the people who are suffering, and
uh-huh.
you're saying you got to buy into it. What are they buying into?
Well, they're buying into the state and only the state. And everything you do is for the good of the state.
Right.
That pretty much sums it up.
And a lot of times it's based on some sort of idealized past, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which, again, after World War I, that made it easy because this nation, like Germany, was suffering tremendously.
Right.
And so they were saying, well, we used to be great. We need to reclaim our superiority.
Right. Even if they weren't great, it doesn't matter.
No,
it
because
can be mythical as long as they buy into it.
Right, yeah, like the 50s.
Right.
And also there tends to be one ethnic group that is singled out as the important one, and everything else is being – every other group is dragging this one group down, and they need to be dealt with.
The master race in the case of Germany, for sure.
Yeah, and that's where we come to the difference between the capital F and the lowercase f, right, as far as fascism
goes. I didn't know this. apparently Mussolini's is capitalized and Hitler's is not.
Yeah.
And he was probably pretty angry about that.
I would think so, too.
He wanted a capital F.
Yeah, he got angry a lot. Mussolini's fascism was largely based on going and waging war just for the hell of it, right?
Yes.
Just to show the glory of the state. Hitler's conquests actually had a method to the madness, right?
Right.
His was basically based on furthering the Aryan race through conquest.
Yeah, I got a cool quote for you.
All right.
This Italian fascist philosopher, who knew? Giovanni, oddly enough, his name is Giovanni Gentile. He says, mankind only progresses through division, and progress is achieved through the clash and victory of one side over another.
Right.
So basically, you can't progress unless you are dividing people and conquering. So there you have it.
That's what my dad always said.
And his name is Gentile.
Yeah.
Or Gentile.
Nice. Thanks, Chuck. I was looking forward to this one because I knew that you bust the Italian accent out a lot.
Well, you know, it's in my blood.
There's another characteristic that we didn't mention, and it's authoritarian leadership, right?
Right.
I mean, you've got Mussolini, you've got Hitler. They have these cults of personality surrounding them.
Yeah, that's really important.
And they come to embody the state, right?
Right.
So, like, it's kind of, you can pretty much interchangeably say, everything you're doing is for the glory of Germany, or everything you're doing is for the glory of Hitler. They're pretty much interchangeable.
Yeah, that's why they had their flags and their posters all over the place.
Right. Which they love their posters.
They do.
Yeah.
Or did.
There's also a tremendous amount of violence in these societies as well.
You can't have war without violence.
You can't have, well, not only that, it's not, domestically, you also have violence. So, in addition to, say, Hitler's process of the final solution, where he's furthering the Aryan race by murdering anybody who's not a member of it.
Right.
There's also, there's domestic violence for anyone who speaks out, any resistance movements, anything like that. They're going to be crushed.
Yes.
You're not supposed to wage war indiscriminately for the glory of the state. You're really not supposed to turn on your own people.
No.
Right?
Frowned upon.
Most decidedly. So what's life like if you are one of those people who would have passed the Milgram experiment with flying colors and are just waving flags and happy as can be to see Mussolini's Il Duce car driving past?
Well, it's not a very happy place because Mussolini flat out rejected what he called the myth of happiness.
Yeah, he did, didn't he?
And it's not a good place if you're a woman, because the only thing you are under a fascist regime as a woman is a little fascist maker.
Yeah.
They don't want you working or anything. They want you making little fascists.
And the youth are accentuated in these societies, right?
Survival of the fittest.
It is survival of the fittest, but also the youth make the best soldiers.
Yeah.
And they're also the leaders of tomorrow. So if you indoctrinate them throughout their lifetimes, beginning at an early age, they're going to have the same ideals.
Yeah.
Right?
It's also not very good if you're gay.
No, it's not.
Because aside from Hitler and the gang thinking it's like, you know, mass perversion, it's also, you can't make little fascists.
Right.
So that was no good.
I didn't know that. Is that why homosexuals were targeted so much under Hitler and Mussolini?
Well, for
Mussolini?
Both those reasons. They thought it was perverse, and then they, you know, you can't make baby fascists, so what good are you?
Right.
But Hitler thought it could be cured. Mussolini just outlawed it altogether.
Right. There's also, lots of rallies, parades.
Sure.
Like you said, posters everywhere.
Yeah.
It's ubiquitous. The sentiment of fascism, everything for the state, and the leader. They're everywhere you go. So if you're, you know, 16, 17, and you're courting, mm-hmm. you're going to go to a state parade.
Fun.
State holiday. They tend to take on a religious quality, right? Because there's no religion but nationalism.
Well, yeah. That's a little tricky because they reject religion in a lot of ways. But in the article, it pointed out Mussolini in Italy clearly cannot reject Catholicism.
Yeah.
Because that's where it's rooted. So he would kind of use the church to his advantage when it worked for him.
And Hitler did a lot the same as well, right?
Sure.
Yeah. He was a protector of the church.
Right. So they say.
God, these guys are crazy. Luckily, this fascism didn't take off all that well.
No.
It basically had a pretty short run. 1918 to 1945 was the height of it, right?
Yeah, that's not very long.
This is where you find the fascist states in Germany, Italy,
uh-huh.
Romania had one yes, pretty much.
Spain sort of did.
Spain did, yeah. When Franco led the revolution, right. He was colluding with the fascists, but they apparently weren't organized enough or widespread enough to really come on as the functioning government. So he just took on, he adopted some of their fascist values
right.
in Spain.
You know, what I think one of the coolest things is why it didn't work out was the reason it shouldn't work out is people started to say, wait a minute, genocide probably isn't a very cool thing to do. And violence and mass murder is, we're kind of bad guys now. And I don't know if I like that.
Right. We're sick of the shock troops.
Yeah, exactly.
Just cracking our skulls for smiling because happiness is a myth, an absurd myth, right?
Yes. And so after World War II, the chaos is gone, which, you know, they depend on that kind of chaos to rally the people.
Right. And the fascism was seen even before World War II or during World War II as leading the world to war.
Yeah.
These guys were just conquering nations, like going out and invading other nations that were nearby for whatever reason. And they had to be stopped, which is why World War II, I think, is viewed as such a positive war.
Right.
There were such clear, mind-bogglingly distinct bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
The world
was
at risk.
The rest of the world was like, we're going to take you down.
Sure.
And they did and fought well together. And, you know, it was, as far as wars go, a pretty great war.
Yeah, we're not war guys, obviously, the kind of wars we wage today. But back then, I think I would have grab my musket. Oh, wait. Probably not a musket. I would have grabbed my...
You would have been really in trouble had you gone to the front lines of World War II.
I would have grabbed my bolt-action rifle, and I would have gone after Hitler.
Yeah.
I would have tried to.
Yeah. I would have been love Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, I was just about to say that. I just saw it again this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Awesome movie.
Unfortunately, fascism didn't completely go away. Like you said, there are small pockets of movements around the world, right?
Are we going to talk about skinheads?
No.
These putzes. No. They're just stupid.
I don't think we should give them any airtime
whatsoever. We shouldn't, because you know what? There's such small pockets of morons out there that embrace this kind of thing these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's just silly.
There's some neo-fascist sentiment that I found surprising. It's called love of difference.
Yeah.
Which is basically just racial separation, but with a different spin on it, right?
Yeah, they say being different is really great. That's why you shouldn't mix races.
Right.
Not because one's better, which is we just like being different.
Right. And being white.
Yeah, so those are kinder, gentler fascists, I guess.
And there's some markers that you can find in some governments. See if you can guess which ones we're talking about. Governments that have anti-immigration laws.
Right.
That's a check. Small progressive limitations on civil rights in the name of giving a democratic country greater security.
Check.
Isolationist foreign policy.
No comment.
And government intervention in the means of production to secure the state from shortages and economic downturns.
Definitely no comment.
Man.
Creepy.
Yeah, so that's fascism.
Yes.
Right? And it's still around here or there. I don't think that there is any pure form of government, is there?
No, but like we said, there are these pockets of morons that embrace, you know, neo-Nazis, that kind of thing. But I shouldn't completely dismiss them because they do act out in violent ways at times. Oklahoma City, obviously.
Yeah.
So I don't want to, like, make light of that. They do bad things.
No, London had some bombings in 1999. I was thinking about that. London's one of the largest metropolitan areas in the world. It's a very progressive city.
Sure.
And it had bombings. It has bombings sometimes.
I know.
That's pretty nuts.
It is.
Okay. So that's fascism. You want to learn more, see some creepy pictures of people smiling and waving flags as Mussolini passes by. And if you love to look at Hitler and hate him, you can find pictures of him on this fascist article by typing fascism in the handy search bar at howstuffworks.com.
That was the Stuff You Should Know episode called What Exactly is Fascism, originally podcast at howstuffworks.com on March 11th, 2010. If you'd like to contact Josh or Chuck, you can email them at stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can subscribe to Stuff You Should Know and other podcasts at howstuffworks.com and on iTunes. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, and online at WFMU.org. Ah, come on, baby.
downtown Soulville show, Mr. Fine Wine, back after a week away, during which, man, I was having a blast in New Orleans. It was such a great week down there. I was down there for the downtown Soulville show with a bunch of other WFMU DJs. The only real low point was when we were not able to do Michael Shelley's show on Saturday. We had it all set up, and it just didn't work. We were trying to do a live remote broadcast from New Orleans. Me, Michael Shelley, Gaylord. Didn't work out. Other than that, great trip. Got some great new records, some of which I'll be playing. I want to thank Trouble for filling in for me last Friday. You can call me up at 201-200-WFMU. You can email me at finewine@WFMU.org. Soul 45 is on a Friday night. Here's a New Orleans number by Mr. Art Neville.
Yeah.